Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Here we go!
Afternoons on the Score.
This is sad news for me, and it's going to be sad news for anybody out there who is a fan of the Canadian power trio Rush. Anybody who is a drummer, Neil Peart is dead at the age of 67.
Our next guest is one of the greatest drummers in all of rock and roll. Ladies and gentlemen, afterwards, everybody gets a ride in Neil's time machine. So hang around for that. Please welcome Neil Peart.
There was a real maturity coming of age for us as a band because we've been doing so much experimenting of all kinds as individual instrumentalists and as a group of instrumentalists of coming up with like puzzle solving puzzles of playing in odd times and putting big long epics together. And they were for a reason, you know, they were pure exuberance. There was nothing self-indulgence or so-called pretentiousness about it. It was true boyish enthusiasm that was involved in creating all those things.
14 mounted toms. 8 floor toms, and it's all mounted on my infamous quadruple kick drum system. 6 more pieces, I got a bigger kit than Neil Peart from Rush.
One of the best drummers in rock and roll history, an incredible joy and privilege to be on the ground floor with this band.
Okay, for you, Rush 2112, Neil Peart. Monday
warrior, God, there is no drummer better than Neil Peart!
Sid and I have gotten pretty good at a couple of Rush songs.
What do you mean, like fast-paced rock?
No, like Rush. Like the band Rush.
I don't know them.
The Holy Triumvirate. Wait, you don't know Rush?
No.
You don't know Rush, the band?
No, mm-mm.
Exit the Warrior, today's Tom Sawyer?
No.
Well, prepare to be Rushified!
How dare you fail to recognize my greatest accomplishment to date?
What, you finally nailed YYZ?
It's Zed, and no, Neil Peart stands alone.
They were my first show back in 1976, I think, on the 2112 tour, and I've seen them a bunch of times. My youngest son, Jack, is a drummer, and he's going to be really bummed out by this news. Neil Peart, dead at the age of 67.
Every one of those songs was designed to play live. We were a live band, that's all we did, and when I put a drum part together, it was designed to be progressive in the architecture sense and to be challenging enough to play night after night for who knew 30 years. You know, we're playing this whole album now, 30 years later, without cynicism, you know, still liking to play those songs and still proud of them. So that's a lovely way, and it's a fulfillment of the sincerity that was brought to that music at the time and the honest growth.
You want to get some Neil Peart all up in you?
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkin Show, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Welcome into the McNeil and Parkin Show. Parkin's going to be back with us tomorrow. Nick Shepkowski is on in relief. I'm Dan McNeil. We're here until 6 o'clock tonight. You know, social media are sometimes really nasty places full of hate and indignation and anger and judgment. But it's been my experience for the last 10-plus years doing Facebook and the last 5 or 6 on Twitter that sometimes those places that can be so very ugly can be a wonderful place to find comfort and community, and certainly when there is a death, whether it's personal or it's with a celebrity, it's a place I have found to be a very safe haven to go to share those feelings with fellow fans of a certain actor, in this case a musician, and I found enormous comfort over the weekend and relating to a lot of you listeners, who many of whom texted the show. I mean, we got news on Friday of Neil Peart's passing, and that is how it's pronounced, kids. That's how he pronounced it, around 3:30. We probably didn't go more than 5-10 minutes at any stretch before there wasn't at least one texter wanting to know if I had been made aware of it and expressing condolences, which is a little bit more than I need. I don't need to be consoled. I'm sad in a way you get sad over a celebrity. But the music that for so many years traveled so many miles in my heart and in my head with it. But it was very nice to get with people who shared my feelings for Rush, and in particular for Neil's work. So I would say for that reason, I'm a big fan of this here Twitter and this here Facebook, because sometimes people can show their human side. Even the ugliest of people can show up when somebody's feeling blue and try to pick you up a little bit. It was a nice weekend from that standpoint.
That's good to hear. Did you give I Love You Man a spin? Are you planning to give I Love You Man a spin anytime?
I was trying to steer Patrick in that direction for his Saturday night film, but he didn't want to watch it because I think it was about 6 months ago when we watched it last. So he took a pass on that. I watched Time Stand Still, a documentary on their final tour just 4 years ago. And in it, Neil talks about how difficult it had been for him to continue to play at the level at which he played, because he was a monster drummer. He was an athlete. He attacked a gigantic set of drums and percussion instruments and was very, very busy. And fighting arthritis, he wasn't able to play at the same level. And he said, in 7 years, I'll be 71. And at 71, I can play Charlie Watts parts, but I can't play Neil Peart parts. And he's not going to make it. He passed away last Tuesday at the age of 67, and none of us had even known he was sick.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That was a surprise to me, was that that's like you hear these things, and lots of times it's someone gets sick and they're out there to try to help raise money to find a cure, whatever it may be. He had no idea. Tanny and I are sitting on the other side of the glass the other day, and we're both like, oh, my God. Wait, what? Was that expected? Was that?
We got a shake up north.
And had no idea whatsoever, because usually you at least hear that part. No one had a clue.
And yes, those of you who have texted asking if I noticed network football broadcast this weekend going to break or coming out of break with Rush Beds, I absolutely did. I saw it in every game over the weekend, including The Final Word last night, I think, with Danny Parkins' TV show. I'm sorry, it's Lou Kanellis' TV show. Danny wants it, but right now he can't have it. He's only a participant on it. There was a Rush bet on that one last night.
Was
as
there?
Well. Yeah.
I didn't catch it, if so, but I'm also not as familiar with the work of a Rush as you are.
Yeah,
I haven't been as Rushified.
The NFL this weekend was everything I wanted it to be and more. And I am so hopeful we won't be horribly let down this coming Sunday with conference championships. If there's a blowout, and there both of them could be blowouts. Nothing should surprise anybody in this NFL. But if there's a blowout, I think it's coming in San Francisco, and I think it's the 49ers who will provide the hammer while the Packers provide the nail.
I guess if I have to handicap it this early, and I mean, last week I got myself in trouble. The Ravens did what they did, and the Chiefs looked like they were going to give it away too. I was on board very much so with the two biggest favorites, and one of them came through, one of them didn't. I hate being on that side because I just feel very comfortable in Kansas City to be able to score points, and I feel very good about San Francisco both, but then I hate myself when I look at it and say that, yep, I'm feeling great about both. Touchdown favorites in this thing. I don't love being on that in that position.
We'll get back to baseball, or sorry, get back to football in just a little bit. Let's make baseball front and center right now and do it with our insider. He regularly joins us to talk about what used to be called America's pastime on this show. That is baseball. It's John Morosi from MLB Network and also Fox Sports. Boy, Jim Crane follows Major League Baseball's lead today. Just a bizarre turn of events, John. Were you, first of all, were you expecting baseball to come down as hard on the Astros as they did? And for those who don't know what the punishment was, it's a year suspension for the general manager and the field manager. It doesn't really matter at this point now. And also draft picks, first and second rounders this year and next year. Was that harsher than you were expecting?
It was. It was one of the harshest penalties I can recall in professional sports in my lifetime, really. It was on that level. And it was a strong statement by MLB. Of course, likely to be followed by, depending on what they find with the Red Sox, potentially a similar set of punishments in the next several weeks as they try to wrap that investigation up by spring training following the most recent revelations of the Red Sox engaging in some different sign stealing activity. But it is a it's a difficult day for the game. There's no question about that. These were two very bright people in the game. While Luno was a controversial figure in many ways, he did win a World Series 2 years ago and then nearly got to within 9 outs of another one here this year. And then A.J. Hinch, one of the bright young managers in the game that really, previous to this situation, was universally well-respected. So it is a difficult day for the game, a necessary one, though, in light of what's happened. And I did, I will say, I mean, I expected MLB to come down very firmly on the Astros. This even exceeded my own expectations. I think in the end it was a very fair penalty. It was what they had to do, and I think that they did the right thing. And even though after the suspension was levied against both Luno and AJ, it did still take my breath away a little bit when Jim Crane said that they'd both been let go just minutes later. It was really, while when you look back on it, there is a lot of logic to making that call and just saying you have to start fresh. I get that. But it's still, just given where that team was just a few months ago, it did take my breath away for a minute.
John, on this part, did baseball kind of ask for this in that it's not the traditional way you think of sign stealing, but there weren't any rules necessarily against it? Am I wrong there?
Well, Nick, what happened was initially there was the general prohibition against using technology to steal signs as the advent of replay monitors came into being. But the key thing here was late in the 2017 season when the Red Sox were caught with the Apple Watch and the allegations were brought forward by the Yankees against the Red Sox in that particular circumstance. That is what happened here. Once that occurred, the commissioner came out and said he was going to hold the field manager and general manager responsible for all those teams regarding their use of technology and making sure it wasn't being used for sign-stealing activities. And so once the league was warned generally about it in 2017, in the fall of 2017, and according to this report, and both the report, and the most importantly, the report that was released today by MLB, following up on the Athletics' initial report, what MLB did today, and Ken Rosenthal mentioned this today on the air, in fact, on MLB Network, is they went even a step further than what the initial Athletic report said, which was that they had been doing it during the 2017 postseason when, of course, they won the World Series. So when you consider that, the fact that they were doing this while they were winning the World Series in 2017, that was after the period of time that Ken Rosenthal was reporting about with Evan Drellick, and also after the point that MLB said following the Apple Watch story, hey, cut it out. No more. I draw the parallel here to the testing for PEDs in 2005. That was when, if there was any lingering ambiguity in baseball, it should have been eliminated in 2017 and in the fall of 2017. And so similar again to 2005 with the steroid testing and the fall of 2017 here, there was a line drawn. The Astros crossed that line, and now they have been penalized in a manner that should manifestly dissuade any other team from attempting a similar endeavor. And by the way, I did speak today with a source at MLB and was told there is no current active investigation on any team besides the Boston Red Sox. So while there was, the Astros had said at one point in time via reports that they believed other teams were engaging in this, I can tell you that right now, based on what I was told today, the only team still under active investigation now is the Boston Red Sox.
John Morosi with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. John, I'm sure you heard the commentary from Jim Crane, the owner, today, and I've not heard much from this guy in the past, but I walked away from his news conference just hearing a couple of sound bites. feeling like this is a guy who I think fans would want to hear representing their team. I thought he acted quickly. I thought his comments were very presidential, expressed sorrow over the news, but also moving on and doing it immediately. I think he acted today like I think a lot of us would like our executives to comport themselves.
Well, it was, I think, a very important step for the organization. I think it was, in the end, the right move today when you really factor in all the considerations. But I do think, looking backwards, and MLB said very clearly in their report, they do not believe Crane had knowledge of this activity. That may well be true, but there was a really bad culture around this front office for a long time. And that doesn't just refer to this instance. It includes Brandon Taubman's reprehensible actions in the very insensitive language he used to female reporters in the month of October. It involves, in general, the way they have treated a lot of people around the game for a long time. And that, you could call it arrogance. You could call it just a lack of empathy and understanding for other people. That part of the culture has been going on for a long time with the Astros, and they have to make sure that with this next step, with the hire of a new GM and the hire of a new manager, that they set a new course. But as the question came to me earlier today in a different conversation, how far down the food chain must you go if you believe that anybody who had knowledge of the sign stealing must go? Well, how hollowed out must the organization then become? Or do you then say, listen, I believe it was the responsibility of the field manager and the GM. They're both gone. We're starting over. Two different approaches, but it's not an accident that over the last several years, not just to take different GM jobs, but for lateral moves, well-respected baseball people left this organization. And I think it's because the culture was not good. And so I think Jim Crane, he says right now he's going to be in charge of baseball operations for the interim. He is going to have to really take a meaningful, deep dive into why things went wrong, where they went wrong, and how he can fix it with a much better culture going forward. Because the prevalence of I think, a lack of respect for the game and for people, frankly, that we have seen from this organization, that would not happen a lot of other places. There are people in place that believe, I think, in a higher standard of just how you treat people. And I think the Astros right now are really in a circumstance where they have to reckon with that reality right now in the coming weeks at a very important time for the organization.
Do you think Jeffrey Liu now or A.J. Hinch cash a Major League Baseball check again?
I think A.J. will. I'm not sure about Jeff Liu. Jeff Liu, again, he's been a very divisive figure in the game. He's been very successful, but he's been very divisive. And he is someone who, when he was not top command with the Cardinals, there was always a lot of friction there. And I don't know how well he would be working under someone in a different setting. A.J. Hinch, I do believe, I think that his report, what the report said about A.J., I believe was not complimentary, certainly, towards A.J., but it treated him fairly and recognized the humanity of him acknowledging what had happened, saying that he did try to actually damage the technological equipment on multiple occasions. That's a point in the good column for him. I think that he certainly should have handled it differently, but he did enough, I think, somewhat ethical things along the way that I believe he will work in baseball again.
What does this mean for the Red Sox? What does it mean for Alex Cora?
It's going to be a nervous few weeks for the Red Sox, for sure. And I was told today, Dan, that it's not necessarily imminent that there's going to be a ruling on this by MLB with regard to the Red Sox. They may have to wait for another month or so, which, again, could move into spring training. And there now is the tough decision before John Henry. Does he make the decision now, calculating that Alex Cora, based on the precedent set in the report, which basically said Alex Cora was guiltier than A.J. Hinch, at least in terms of the actions. Now, you could say that the manager should have been held to a higher standard because he's the manager and the bench coach is the bench coach. But clearly, Alex Cora, based on this report, was more integral to the outline of this plot than A.J. was, and A.J. got a year and was fired. So I do think there's going to be some pressure on the Red Sox to have the same outcome, eventually a new manager and probably following up, of course, on what is likely to be a lengthy suspension. So this is a really difficult time for the Red Sox. I believe that in the end, that Alex Cora certainly will not manage the Red Sox in 2020 is my expectation. Beyond that is an open question, but I would say that right now on this day, based on the way things played out with Houston, it is highly unlikely that you would expect to see Alex Cora. If the allegations are true here with the Red Sox, that he would manage a game for them this year.
John, before we let you go here, the Cubs have done nothing this offseason. The natives are restless. Is it even going to get worse for them? Are the Cardinals going to go trade for Nolan Arenado?
Well, there's a decent chance, Nick, that it's going to happen. And I was told over the weekend that the Cardinals have been as active as anybody else in the last week or so with regard to the possibility of a Nolan Arenado deal. They've got the pieces, I believe, to make a deal happen. Dakota Hudson led the league in walks this past year, but is somebody that I believe would appeal to the Rockies. Nolan Gorman is one more name to mention there. Giovanni Gallegos in their bullpen, a key member there. The Rockies would maybe want to build up some of their bullpen by moving Gallegos in that deal too. So I do think there is a decent chance. I don't think it's above 50-50, but I believe that by opening day, there's probably about a 30% chance as we speak right now that Arenado becomes a Cardinal.
That doesn't agree with you, does it?
It's just
it is a difficult time right now for the Cubs. They have been largely stifled in all of their efforts at the moment to add within what has become a relatively constraining payroll, and they have not gotten full production from a lot of their free agents. Of course, we know that part of the story, but they're going to need to have some surprisingly positive stories with their pitching this year, or that division with St. Louis and potentially a rejuvenated Reds team could become very difficult for the Cubs very early on in the season.
John, always enjoy your company. Thanks for joining us today. Have a great night.
My pleasure, guys. Great catching up. I wish it was on a different topic, but better baseball days ahead. I am sure of that.
You got it. Take care, bud. That's John Morosi from MLB Network and Fox. Actually, I think it's a good day for baseball. They acted. And they acted with authority and zeal and not worried about how someone's feelings are going to be hurt about how harsh the ruling was.
You were around for when Southern Methodist University got the death penalty.
Yes, I was.
How close, like, I know that it doesn't hurt for a few years especially because the draft picks don't take effect. But you wipe out a general manager, you wipe out a manager in the middle of January.
Yeah.
You're still constructing a roster. You wipe out the general manager, then everyone's job in that office is essentially up for grabs,
right,
pretty much. Like, is this the baseball equivalent of that? Like, is this about as hard as you can go on a team?
I don't know if the comparison is a good one to compare college to, because there are other things that won't affect the Astros. They don't have their bowl eligibility taken away from them. They'll be
not
able to
have,
go.
Yeah, you're going
to
play
playoffs
on TV
this year.
They'll still
be on television. I guess you could say the draft picks would be akin to scholarship reductions.
Yeah.
But only four of them over 2 years. So
it's just God, for a team that's built so much on those resources, they draft well. They don't spend a dollar more than their figures say that they should spend on draft picks. And that part, like the $5 million, is going to be big in that regard too. Not to say that their ownership group doesn't have $5 million, but the way that this team was built and kind of put together, it's $5 million was a ton of money because of all the things you could do internationally and be able to go and take a risk on a Jose Altuve or Dallas Keuchel or whoever it might be. And it just eliminates possibilities of that, too.
Yeah. We'll keep talking about this and a little bit more NFL stuff. The Bears have hired a new offensive coordinator. Bill Lazor, L-A-Z-O-R, is here. Hooray, hooray. Just what Andy Dalton needs to get familiar with the Matt Nagy offense. He was his offensive coordinator last year with the Bengals. Shep sitting in for Parkins. I'm McNeil. You've got the score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Dígame, señor. Gracias. Número 54.
All right, what's the matter, partner?
It's official, old buddy. Well, has been.
What are you talking about? What did that guy tell you?
Told me the truth is what he told me.
Here, put these on. Don't cry in front of the Mexicans. Now, which guy are you so upset, man?
Well, coming face to face with the failures that is your career ain't worth crying about, then I don't know what the is.
Stop! Stop already! You're Rick Effin Dalton! That's from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio, both of whom are nominees, received nominations for Best Actor, one for Supporting, one for Lead, for Quentin Tarantino's most recent picture, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is one of the nine nominees for this year's Best Picture announced earlier today.
Nine of them. I'm going to go through all nine of those before the Oscars and break them all down for you.
I have seen only two of them in their entirety. I have got some work ahead of me, Shep. I've only seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Joker. Now, I've seen Joker twice, but that doesn't count for anything extra. I've got seven more films to watch, all nominated. I've seen a little bit of Ford versus Ferrari, but it was a little bit too loud in a theater with an autistic young man who's a little bit sensitive to the volume. The race cars, you know, they got it all amped up there, and they should. That's what people want. Balls tremble, right? That's got to be loud. But I got a lot of work to do. I still need to see The Irishman. I need to see Jojo Rabbit. Here are your nominees. Ford versus Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Parasite. The awards in, what, 3 weeks? I think 3-4 weeks we got awards?
Yeah, just after weekend after the Super Bowl,
February
correct?
February 9th. Yep.
February 9th. Lots of work to be done. I'll do it. It's a labor of love.
How many times has Little Women been made? I remember that, like, the remake of Little Women was made when I was at probably 7 or 8 years old. And that being a big deal back then in the early 90s.
Yeah, I've never seen any incarnation of Little Women, so I don't know. I'm gonna watch it though. It's nominated.
Okay.
So.
Is there one? Like, do you have a favorite of the two you've seen?
Actually, I was rooting for Knives Out to get a nomination, but I was hopeful that I would not be rooting for it to win Best Picture. Therefore, I'm not feeling like it's. It's a terrible snub, although it didn't get much love whatsoever. There are actors, actresses not getting nominations either for that one. So, no, nothing that I loved Joker. I thought Joker, and I went in with a low expectation. Man, did Joaquin Phoenix crush it. It yeah. is dark. It's I saw a lot of Ted Levine from Silence of the Lambs in the lead, Danny.
Can you help me with this coach? You talk about one guy just driving a movie along. You know, like that's Joaquin Phoenix in Joker. He was so good in that movie, so dark, so uncomfortable, and it was nice for Robert De Niro to play Robert De Niro in that movie. I was like, I haven't talked to you about that part of it yet, but
Murray Franklin, yeah,
yeah. But Joker is outstanding. I've seen Marriage Story, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, The Irishman, Joker. So I got some work to do, but you know, like you said, labor
so
of
far,
love, somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good thing about Bulls and Blackhawks games not being of critical importance. We can watch movies and move the meters the next day with content. And I expect us to be the best show in town when it goes, not just in a sports format. I expect this show to have the most insightful, most engaging, most conversational discussion about the Oscars of every show. I don't care who's throwing it out there, even on the other talk shows.
I know that the story of the Joker, at least, it lends itself to it, but I assume that for me, I have not yet seen that one, not seen any of these yet. I'm going to go barrel through all nine of them before we get to Oscar night.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not. Because you'll watch the Bulls and the Indiana Pacers when they're there for you.
I do, but I'd rather watch the Joker, and I want to do this little radio bit where I break all these down for you guys and share what my beliefs and my thoughts are from these movies. But as he is punchable at the end of this movie, in the Joker, I assume he's playing the role of a villain.
It's just Joker. It's not the Joker.
Oh, it's not the Joker.
It's just Joker.
Just Joker.
Yes. No.
It's
no
the
article.
Ohio State University and just Joker.
Just Joker, right.
Okay.
Right.
Is he as punchable at the end of it as he is in every other movie he's seemingly in?
More than punchable.
Oh my God.
He's yeah. Yeah. Like, you're thinking of Gladiator, I bet, right?
Well, it's one of the many.
Everybody wanted
in
to
Troy,
see him dead.
In Troy he is.
Yeah,
like yeah. yeah, every movie he's in, I just at the end of it, outside of what's the alien one, Signs. Where yeah. he's told swing away.
Right,
like,
right.
That's the one decent role he's had that you don't want to, like, watch his life end at the end of a movie.
I'll give you one more. You probably haven't seen him do the biographical work on Johnny Cash. He was pretty good in that.
Likeable
in that. Yeah.
Yes. I did see that, and I did like it. Yeah, okay.
See?
All right. So he's not always punchable. Although he had some punchable parts in that movie.
Yeah,
not always punchable.
He leaves it all out there on the film, man. What was that movie, The Master, that he was in? He was amazing in that. He's a really good actor. And like, if you just want to see somebody acting their ass off, Joker is right there for you. It's not, don't look at it as like a comic book movie per se. You know, it's really just dark, and it makes you feel kind of icky. That's why I don't know if you yeah. saw any movies by yourself while Ashley was pregnant. That's like the sweet spot to catch up on some of these movies. You're past that now, obviously, but I did a lot of that going to the theater when my wife was pregnant. Like, she'll be in bed by like 8 o'clock at night. Like, well, we'll slip out to a picture show here tonight. but yeah, you got a lot of work to do because I don't think any of these, a lot of them aren't yet available on demand yet. So you have to get out to a theater. Maybe do a little switch off you and the wife there. Like, duck out now. You can duck out tomorrow. Get yourself a babysitter one of those nights. And yeah, you got some work to do, buddy.
I can take a screaming child to a movie theater. People like that, right? That always goes over very well, just
always.
Like flying, I'm sure.
Well, they have show times where it's like conducive for that.
Sure.
But I don't think it's for those movies, though.
Right.
I think it's for kids' movies.
Tanny, I'm glad you mentioned Joker not being a superhero movie. It's not. It is not a comic book. It says at the end this is based on a Marvel character, and that's it.
Yeah, there's the one scene that links it with like the superhero universe. DC, by the way, it's a DC movie.
Oh, DC?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just so before the nerds get after us. But yeah, there's one scene that would make it have like a comic book movie feel, and it's very short. But the rest of it is just kind of, you know, just like a... It just murderous yucky time.
Yeah, those of you who are texting and didn't like Joker, I understand why you feel that way. One guy says Joker was terrible. It's Joaquin Phoenix laughing and dancing around for 2 hours with no story. I agree with the former, not the latter. There is a story. This young man is sick. He has mental illness. He isn't getting any better through help using social services. He's having that cut off because it's been the funding for social services. I don't want to give you too much, but it's a story about a guy who's very, very disturbed, and it's a very, very, I think I found it to be a believable story, except for him getting the shot on the talk show. And that's where I'll leave it.
Yeah, okay, I'll leave it there. But remember, a lot of that you're seeing it and living it through his mind's eye. You know what I mean? So, you know, right. A lot of these things aren't necessarily happening per se. So
right.
Take it with a grain of salt. But yeah, it's a ride, man.
Yes, it is. I was entertained so much I watched it twice. And I saw It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood at the movies. Yeah, I did. You know what, Shep? That Tom Hanks, I think he's got a future in this business.
Do you?
Yeah.
Is it going to, whenever Tom Hanks' birthday is it going to rearrange your draft board when we do the third annual Tom Hanks movie draft on his birthday next year?
I don't think it will. It's not so much just about Fred Rogers. In fact, Tom Hanks is nominated for a supporting role, actually. Now, the story is not as much about Mr. Rogers as it is the guy who is covering him for Esquire magazine, who has very few friends, and his editor asks him to do a puff piece on Fred Rogers. So he goes to Pittsburgh and spends a lot of time with Fred Rogers and finds out what a person who is genuinely kind and genuinely generous is all about, because he's anything but Fred Rogers, and he doesn't believe it at first that he can be real, this guy. And the more you watch it, the more you're drawn to it. I thought Tom Hanks absolutely crushed it with Fred Rogers. And my little brother, 10 years younger than I am, he's 49. He's growing up right in the, you know, right at the beginning of the Mr. Rogers, you know, when it was starting to take off. So I knew all of the characters. I hadn't seen it in years. And Patrick was appreciative of it because he remembered all of that from his youth, King Friday and all of the songs. And it's a heartwarming film. It really, really is. I think Pat Hughes would sign up for it if you gave him a chance.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because if I was going to go to Pittsburgh to do like that kind of feature on someone, it'd be of Wani. I think that's Wani needs a movie done about him, like, or at least a football life. Can we get NFL Network on the phone and have them start to produce that for Wani?
I thought of Wani yesterday when Jimmy Johnson immediately began to talk about his assistant coaches. When he got upset, when he got emotional over his Hall of Fame enshrinement, when he's given the news and he says, I just think immediately of all the assistants who've helped me along the way and all the play. And I immediately flashed to Dave Wunstead. And also my second thought was, all right, Dave, get him on the phone with us this coming week. Get him on with us.
Thinking
damn
the same
it.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
now I can't stop thinking about a whiny Mr. Rogers reboot. sitting down, putting the sweater on. What are we talking about? King Friday? What are we doing here? Let's talk Bears.
Where's the trolley? Where's the trolley? A trolley coming?
Mr. McFeely, what are we doing here?
Got any mail lying around?
Need your feet washed?
.com. .com.
But yeah, that's okay. So what else from that movie list then? Like, what are you knocking out next? What do you have to see if you're not going to see all nine of them?
Little Women, probably.
You have to see?
1917 has a real good chance to win Best Picture, so I'm going to prioritize that, even though war films are not my thing. I like war movies that aren't war movies about the front line.
You like Gladiator movies?
Not particularly, no. No, thanks. You?
No, I'm not necessarily. What was it about war movies? Just because of the gore, the blood, every one of them's kind of the same?
I guess I want it both ways. There are a few of them I do like. I like Platoon, and that's frontline stuff. But what I like most about that is how the guys bond away from the battle lines and how they become fractured. That's the story there. The Piano was a war picture. That's not a war. I mean, it is, but Adrian Brody's life away. He's not on the front line, and his character was so absolutely fantastic. He was just terrific. Loved it. So, yeah, not a big war movie guy.
Right.
Not a big Bill Lazor guy either. Didn't know anything about him, but Andy Dalton knows him. Are the Bears tipping their hand here by hiring the former Bengals assistant coach?
Yeah, right.
Andy Dalton on his way?
Andy Dalton's going to be here next year. He's going to be next year's Ryan Tannehill. You just wait and see. He's finally going to lift the burden of losing all those playoff games at home. He's going to be winning playoff games next year in a Bears uniform. Just you watch, Mac.
When I intimated that a little while ago, a texter says, you know what sucks? I actually would prefer Andy Dalton, and I'm no Andy Dalton fan. That's how a lot of people feel.
Andy Dalton over Mitch Trubisky?
Yeah. Now, I was not among those locally who stressed over the Ryan Pace factor in Sunday's Chiefs-Texans game. I mentioned it once. That was at halftime. I don't think about how Ryan Pace crippled the Bears when I'm watching the Kansas City Chiefs and Houston Texans. I'm glad I was free of that burden. A lot of others expressed an inability to get past it when the game was on because the game was so damn good. I didn't need that in my head.
No, and then even like the game afterwards, I just don't have the same like, oh God, it just pains me to watch the Packers win a playoff game. It's like, oh, the team has owned the stinking Bears, and they've owned the division my entire life, or at least my football-watching life. I'm kind of used to it by now, and it's kind of cool to see Aaron Rodgers, who maybe his turnover numbers are still Aaron Rodgers-like. He doesn't turn the ball over ever, but he's making the huge throws late to seal that thing up. In a day that Russell Wilson was flat-out awesome and kept Seattle in that game and kept them coming back, Aaron Rodgers made the big-time throws, made the big-time plays to seal that thing away and send it to the conference championship again. I thought that was cool to see an absolute legend do that yet again in a big-time moment.
We will hit you one last time with our thoughts on tonight's college football national championship game in a couple minutes.
This segment brought to you by the all-new Super Double Slam, just $6.99 at Denny's, introducing the Denny's Super Duper Slam with bacon, sausage, eggs, hash browns, and all-you-can-eat pancakes for just $6.99. The deal is so super, we just had to add a duper. For a limited time, price may vary. See you at Denny's.
Shep sitting in for Parkins. I'm Mac. You got the score.
That'll do it.
On Bovada right now, LSU is a 5.5-point favorite over Clemson. The LSU Tigers are -190 on the money line. That's dipped. That's nice. I like that. That means you risk $190 to win $100, just LSU straight up. Don't have to cover anything on the money line if you're a Clemson guy or girl. +165, a $100 wager earns you $165 in exchange. The total, 67. Give me your best move.
Of all things there, I like over 67. That's the one I like the most and feel the most confident in. Second is LSU to win. It's right in that area of I don't think they blow out Clemson, but I think they're in control most of the night. Mm-hmm. If I go one way on that, it's LSU to cover. So I feel better about, I guess, the LSU money line than I do them covering. I don't like Clemson's ability to move the ball with regularity. I think they rely so much on the big play, and it's fine. They have guys that can do that. It's not a defense that allows a whole heck of a lot of that. They slowed down Oklahoma big time. That's as powerful offense as there is in college football in the Peach Bowl, and I think you see more of the same in that department tonight.
Good luck, whichever way you go.
Thank you.
I think I'll take the over. Not sure about LSU. I want to. I really want to. I just want to shove it up, Parkey. thank you for sitting in for him today.
No, love doing it. Thanks for letting me.
Thanking Chris Tannehill for being the surgeon of sound, Herb Lawrence for helping out today, as well as Shane Reardon. Our guests today included Boomer Esiason from CBS and our sister station, WFAN. He's our Monday afternoon quarterback after every NFL weekend. We also visited with Teddy Greenstein from the Tribune today, and John Morosi from Fox and MLB Network gave us his thoughts on the Astros story today. A huge story. We got Bulls around the corner for you. Be back here tomorrow at 2 o'clock for another McNeil and Parkin show. Have a great night, everybody. I'm Mac, and I'm Tail Lights.
We're just on fire. We had the time of our life. We played just beautiful music all afternoon. We've been going. We've been jamming all day. Today, my dreams came true.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no. I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.